Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, health and nutrition, absolutely good information coming your way, but then I'm going to spend a little more time than normal on discussing the flu vaccines, and what I would consider the more natural and healthier ways to build up your immune system. It is not the microbe, it is the milieu, the medium, your body, that needs to be worked on, so we'll share that. Then in the second part of our program today, we'll have Danny Sheehan. Danny is one of those unique and rare individuals. He's a constitutional lawyer, one of the best in America, and he's going to give us his insights into what is happening in this bipartisan wrestling match in Washington, D.C., where historically the left, or those aligned with the Democratic Party, would say, let us have transparency. Let us see the truth, and so we can decide for ourselves. And today they're saying we shouldn't see documents. We should trust the FBI and trust the CIA and trust the Justice Department, that it is the Republicans and this president who are wrong, and they're the ones who should be investigated, nothing further. Needless to say, people are divided on partisan lines. We're not partisan. We're going to look for the truth in this, and I'll be sharing some new insights that you have not put into the equation before. And we'll be hearing from Alan Dershowitz, the Harvard constitutional attorney, on this issue as well. But we always start with health and healing, and this comes from Mount Sinai Hospital, published in Nature Communications, and it talks about how researchers found grape-derived compounds, meaning things that are naturally in grapes, that could help you against depression. And it's called DHCA. It's a chemical. It's dihydrocaffeic acid. And they also found what is called Malglut, MAL-GLUC, which is a malvidin-3-O-glucoside. These are chemicals naturally occurring in every grape that you eat, or grape juice, or less so in wine. And they can be used in the therapeutic treatment of depression, and indicates these natural, all-natural compounds may attenuate depression by targeting newly discovered underlying mechanisms of the disorder. So that's good. So look now for, well, before anything comes out, I'd just like to give you the advanced news, but start eating more grapes. Now, of course, not always can you get organic grapes. So let's say you can't get an organic grape. What do? You can take a regular grape, dark grapes, blue, black, and red grapes, and soak them in some hydrogen peroxide or spray them with a vegetable cleaner you can find in any health food store. There are many different brands. And then you agitate it in water and rinse it. That'll get rid of about 98% of any pesticide residues. And then get yourself grape concentrate, grape juice, and grape powder. They're all good for you. New research suggests your immune system can protect against the MRSA infections. Now, that's very important. MRSA is a very serious infection that leads to tens of thousands of deaths. And this is from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. And after years of investigation, researchers at Johns Hopkins, as well as the University of California, Davis, and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease have discovered how the immune system might protect a person from recurrent bacterial skin infections caused by the Staphylococcus aureus, what we call MRSA. And the findings are published in the Journal of Clinical Investigation. And how bad is it? Well, this is a staph skin infection. It accounts for 14 million outpatient visits, 500,000 hospital admissions, about $3 to $4 billion in out-of-pocket expenses every year in the United States. It's huge. It's big. And you rarely hear anything about it. So, and then when you take antibiotics, you actually work against it because most antibiotics are not able to kill this. But staph is a common bacterium and the most common cause of skin infections in people. And additionally, multi-drug resistant strains like the methicillin resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, are causing severe skin infections in healthy people outside of hospitals. For example, now we're seeing it in athletes from, let's say, football players, basketball players, people who are in contact sports and who are getting sweat from other people on their body. And so it's serious. Now, when you go into a hospital, you're in a really toxic environment. That's not to condemn hospitals, because hospitals can also be very important in saving our lives, especially for emergency care. But when you see how many people develop some form of immunocompromised condition, go into a hospital, and then the environment's not sterilized. And so you could be touching a doorknob or a railing on a bed or top of your tray that you're fed on. And if that's not sterilized, you could end up with that infection. And that's what's happening. So the key here is that you got to build up your immune system. I remember once I was working with a woman who had advanced multiple sclerosis. And nothing was working. And she had been to all the top holistic doctors in New York. In fact, she said she had been to 27 holistic physicians, everyone that was in New York she had been to, over a four-year period as her condition progressed and she became worse and worse. So I asked her, why'd you come to me? And she said, because I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. I've tried everything they've suggested. Nothing's working, and I didn't know what else to do. So I sat with her for a while, and while I'm talking with her, as she's speaking, I can see that she has fillings. And I said, what kind of fillings do you have? She said, just regular silver fillings. How many do you have? I don't know. Well, let's take a look. She had 14. I said, are you aware that over 52% of that silver filling is mercury? And every time you eat, every time you drink, tiny amounts of that mercury is going into the brain and your central nervous system. No, I didn't know that. So I made an appointment for her to get all of her fillings removed and composite put in its place. And then I was going over her diet, and there was a whole lot of high protein in there. She'd been to some of these high protein doctors. So got her on a plant-based diet, had her taking a lot of chlorophyll each day, I mean a lot, plus intravenous vitamin C. 3 weeks later, she had no pain and she was regaining her balance. 3 months later, she had made such improvement that when I did and some of you might have been there that day. I'll bet someone in this audience was there. In fact, I'm curious, if you were there, call in. I'd like to speak with you later at the end of the show. Our call-in number is 888-874-4888, our talkback number. This was a lecture I did at Robert F. Kennedy High School on the east side up in the upper 80s. I had to find the largest high school auditorium I could. It was an all-day conference on alternative approaches to cancer. And from around the world, I had invited the people who I believed had the best alternative cancer therapy. There was Lawrence Burton, Stanislaw Brzezinski, Joseph Issels, Virginia Livingston Wheeler, Al-Qaeda, all the best, Emmanuel Ravisi. They were all there. And we must have had, I'm guessing, 3,000 people throughout the day. It was all day into the evening. And at one point, when I was about to introduce one of the doctors, there was this woman who came over, same woman, and she said, "I just thought you should know that I'm now walking without a walker or a cane." And I said, "Well, how are you doing climbing steps?" She said, "Watch me." And she walked right up the steps to the podium. So I introduced her. I said, "Here's one of those unusual stories that you rarely hear about, an advanced end-stage multiple sclerosis person who 3 months ago was looking at the last part of her life, and now she is no longer using a cane or a walker, and she's got her inner." And I said, "Tell your story." So she went on for about 15, 20 minutes. If anyone in the audience was there that day and remember her, I'd like to hear from you. In any case, it was all about building up her immune system, because she had also been to several physicians, including one that I had a lot of respect for, Theron Randolph. He was the father of environmental medicine. And up in Connecticut was also a physician, Norwalk, Connecticut, a physician who specialized in allergens. They both missed this. They kept trying to see what she was allergic to, but because no one checked her immune system, they kept taking all food, so she could barely eat anything. So I said, "Don't worry about eating. Let's work on your immune system." So I built up her immune system. As I built up the immune system, now listen carefully, this is the takeaway message, three things happened. A, her neurological system improved. B, her immune system was so strong at that point that she no longer had allergens. We never look at this missing link in the allergy picture. It's your immune system rather than fixed or cyclic allergies. And third, she now had energy she hadn't had in a long time and wasn't sick with her normal flus and colds. Because as your immune system weakens, you're susceptible to everything. So just something to share. From Oregon State University, a compound derived from hops shows promise for metabolic syndrome patients. And this is a group of natural compound derived from hops. It can improve cognitive function. It can improve metabolic syndrome. There's your diabetes and prediabetes. And with 35% of all American adults suffering from diabetes, that's, or prediabetes, metabolic syndrome is what it's called. That means high blood pressure, high blood sugar, heart disease, elevated cholesterols, high triglycerides. So we need this. So as this gets further down the road, I will let you know, because I'm sure someone will bring it out sooner or later, and as a compound that we can use. I just like to give you what's coming. And finally, from the University of Dundee, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, shows that aging immune system plays a larger role in cancer incidence than previously thought. Why is that important? Because findings can explain now the higher likelihood of men developing cancer than women, and this research could have major implications for global fight against cancer. And the key to cancer prevention is once again in your immune system rather than genetic mutations. That's the big boogeyman that has been a fear factor, getting women to take completely healthy ovaries, completely healthy breasts off because they have this supposed gene that will mutate. It's nonsense. Anyhow, a lot of people, over 8 million people, die of cancer across the world each year. And men are significantly more likely than women to be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. And for most cancers, the chance of developing the disease increase as you age. And unfortunately, science, in its monotheistic mindset, said, well, as you get older, you're more likely to have cancer, heart disease, high blood pressure, etc., as if that's a normal part of aging. It is not a normal part of aging because they're not looking at its reverse, meaning as you're younger, your immune system is higher. As you get older and you do not work on your immune system, it begins to go down. And if you really don't work on your immune system and you're under a lot of stress, your immune system finally collapses. So it's the collapsing of the immune system because we're not paying attention to it that causes these diseases and the diminishment and shrinking of our thymus gland. And that's important because the primary cause of immune system aging is the shrinking of the thymus gland. This is where your T cells, which circulate the body-killing dysfunctional cells or foreign agents, are produced. And thymic involution begins from around the age of one, and the thymus roughly halves in size every 16 years, with a corresponding fall in the production of T cells. So the researchers found an extremely strong correlation between the chances of certain cancers increasing and new T cell population falling. And you know what they're not looking at? How to create new T cells. We were told, well, you can't do that. Oh, yeah, you can. You can create a whole variety of new stem cells. And they're just not on the same page. More on that on an upcoming program. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm going to take a brief break and come right back and give you some more information on the flu and how to protect yourself. Later today, I'm going to be selecting the music for the next 4 weeks. And I like to try different venues, different types of music. So you'll be hearing it starting tomorrow. Now let's take a look at what's going on with the flu. And I'm going to give you my own original in-depth investigative report. It's posted now on my website called Voodoo Science, The Myth of Vaccine Efficacy. And I'm also going to read a short piece from Dr. Kelly Brogan, as well as another physician who wrote something today that was sent to me concerning the different types of flu. I'm going to start with him. He is Dr. Scott Graves, G-R-A-V-E-S. He has published this in the Natural Blaze, B-L-A-Z-E, a very good publication. If you don't have it, please sign up for it. And his article is entitled The Flu, the Media, and Promoting Fear. I'll quote this. I had a patient this week distraught and freaking out over making sure that she and her family didn't get the flu that was going around. People have been dying, and the mainstream media has been projecting this all over the news. I told her what she was putting into this whole scenario was just lots and lots of fear. Since she has done a lot of emotional releasing and healing with me, I suggest that she let go of the fear and then see what happens. She instantly saw this and calmed down. How many people are living in fear over getting or having the flu this year? Can fear weaken the immune system to the point that the body so-called catches the flu? But do we really catch the flu from others? I've had about 10 patients this week come in with the flu, vehemently instructing me not to get close to them. I always tell them, I'm not going to get the flu, and then I will greet them with a warm hug. So far, I have not gotten the flu. Of course, I cannot say I won't get it, but it is not likely for the reasons I'm going to mention. I have a couple of thoughts that are not in alignment with commonly held beliefs about the flu. One, you don't catch anything from anyone. This completely flies in the face of Western medicine. Germ theory promotes this and has made pharmaceutical companies billions, if not trillions, of dollars. The germ is nothing. The terrain is everything, is what I have learned in practice is more helpful. Detoxification from metals and chemicals, cleansing the body, strengthening the immune system will go a long way in making sure someone stays healthy. When you're around someone with the flu, pay attention to how you react emotionally to them. Do not shake their hand, avoid them, or cover your face with a mask. People often say, don't get close to me, and respond to those with the flu with fear. Fear is one of the most draining emotions on the immune system. When you watch the television, the one emotion that can control people more than any other is fear. The mainstream media controls the masses with fear. I personally don't get the flu shot, but I'm sure in the last week that lots of media controls people to spend their money in getting their flu shots. Doesn't it make more sense to strengthen the immune system rather than just giving it more things to react to? A certain number of people never get the flu during flu season. We should be studying these people. We should be discovering what the factors are that contributes to people being healthy rather than focusing on fear. Flu shots and Tamiflu, we should be doing very detailed studies on the people that typically don't get sick during flu season. My guess is that they are people who have a truly healthy lifestyle, eating good food and are generally happy, live with minimal stress, or know how to handle stress and exercise, and have a strong immune systems. And people who are dying most likely, although I can't say for certain, have very compromised immune systems, eat horribly toxic conventional foods, and consume small to no amounts of vegetables. Okay, that's what he has to say. I would share some agreement and some I would have a different opinion on. For example, there are contaminants, including viruses and bacteria and parasites in people's bodies, that can bring that into you. For example, every time someone gets one of these nasal flu shots, that's a live vaccine in there. And that means that the actual virons, the viruses, are shedding, meaning they're replicating and shedding for at least 2 to 3 weeks after they get that. So imagine children going into a classroom. They're manifesting no symptoms of being sick, and yet just through normal breathing, the virus is being spread on all surface areas in the air. Now, if you have a weakened immune system and you come into contact with that viron, there's a high probability that you could become infected. So yes, you can be infected. Syphilis is very easy to transfer from one body to another, and even in your sweat. And you wouldn't even know necessarily in your whole life that you have it, because it can hide, like hepatitis C. You could have it for decades and not know it. So we have to understand that there are things that we can bring into our system. But I also believe he is correct on this point. We have not been looking at people who stay healthy. In fact, when was last time in any model of health that we actually looked at what constitutes health? What constitutes happiness? What constitutes a natural way of living? Instead, all of our energy, all of our resources go on examining the pathology of disease and finding something that will impact with its with the pathogenesis, the process of a disease. Let's stop it. Let's kill the symptoms. So hence, you see all these signs, no more mucus. Why? Because you took a drug and suppressed how the body expresses and expels mucus? No more headache, no more pain, because you've eliminated the cause of the pain or you've blocked the pain receptors in the brain in the central nervous system to feeling the pain. Our whole approach is one of symptom relief, not of reversing the underlying disease. Now, I'm here every day without the flu or without the cold in my entire career. And that's not because I have a strong immune system. If you look at my genetics, and with all my family members dead, my mother and father both dying at age 58, 2 years apart, and a brother at 60, and aunts and uncles in their 50s and 60s, you think, wow, you know, that's not good genes. Plus everyone chain smoking every day, 2 to 3 packs a day, and secondhand smoke being a toxicant. Then you think, wow, that's not good. So how is it I'm able to see people, sit with them, hold their hand, look them in the eye, no matter what illness they have, and not get sick? It's my immune system, just like it's yours. Our immune systems are no different. It's just that I don't cheat. I don't, you know, I stick to a strict diet and I take in the things that matter. Now, today when I called my office, I'm out of the city, several of the people who work in my office are sick. So I had one of the people go to a local health food store and ask him to make a special drink. And then I called the health food store and I said, here's what you put in it. So listen up. This might help you. You start with a dark green juice, a green juice such as celery, cucumber, and green apple. That's your base. Into which you add a teaspoon of Manuka honey, a 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C buffered, 20 drops of wild oregano oil, colloidal silver 10 drops, olive leaf extract 1,000 milligrams, bee propolis 2 capsules opened up and put in, echinacea 100 milligrams, astragalus 100 milligrams, podiarco 100 milligrams, 2 ounces of lemon juice, 2 ounces of ginger juice. Now, that will help you kill bacteria and viruses that are pathogenic and strengthen your immune system. Again, it makes a big difference. Even my film editor, who should have been in bed for 2 weeks, was only sick for 1 day and took this throughout the day. So we can do a lot when it comes to that. Now, this is what an article from Dr. Kelly Brogan, B-R-O-G-A-N, had to say, and I'll read it. Tamiflu and abnormal behavior. She says, is it really a deadly flu season? And the pharmaceutically funded media would have you believe that you must head off to the local CVS drugstore and get your flu shot to make it through the year. And if the flu shot doesn't work, even the CDC estimates its effectiveness around 39%, well, then just head over to your doctor and get treated with Tamiflu. But is it really that simple? Is it because that we are bumping up against the glass ceiling of the simple solution for sickness? Many of us are rolling our eyes at the 10% off your shopping order with flu shots, and our sniffles don't send us running to the doctor for antibiotics, just in case, as our memories tell a different story from the scary stories on TV. Mom, Dad, didn't you both have measles and live to tell the tale? We are becoming less and less susceptible to fabricated lore. We are harder to scare into action. We are beginning to accept that the magic pill is a fantasy and that this crisis of confidence in our medical system is no small hurdle overcome. It is the initiation into the new belief system. I believe that this initiation begins with information and understanding. So let's bring this back to Earth, for example. Let's look at the simple solution for the flu, Tamiflu. Conventional medicine tells us that you can pull one thread of the spider web without impacting the whole design. So is it possible that Tamiflu, T-A-M-I-F-L-U, can enter your system, kill those nasty flu germs, and quietly exit without harming any innocents? Well, Tamiflu is prescription medication that the FDA approved for anyone 2 weeks and older of age. It is designed to prevent the influenza virus from replicating and invading our cells. The pharmaceutical company that developed Tamiflu, Roche, also called Hoffmann La Roche, claims that Tamiflu can protect against getting the flu and reduce the severity of flu symptoms. Roche cites studies like a 1999 article in JAMA in which the authors write that Tamiflu provides significant antiviral, biochemical, and clinical effects in experimental human influenza virus infection. Okay, well, that sounds good, right? In 1999, Roche represented this study, presented it along with 2 clinical trials involving 1,300 patients to an FDA committee, medical doctors. However, hold on, the committee declined to approve Tamiflu due to a lack of convincing data. So let's dive a bit deeper to see if the data are indeed unconvincing. And they only used 117 young adults and then split them into several groups ranging in age from 11 to 64. Any scientist or statistician will immediately warn you that those group sizes are way too small to draw statistically significant conclusions. With that in mind, let's continue. To measure the prophylactic effects of Tamiflu, researchers gave 12 people a placebo pill and then gave 21 people various doses of Tamiflu before they stuck influenza viruses in their noses. Flu-like symptoms were measured after viral inoculation, and people who had received Tamiflu were rated to exhibit lower symptom scores. From this experiment, based upon a paltry 33 people, researchers concluded that Tamiflu indeed protected against the flu. Next, to determine if Tamiflu reduced the severity of flu symptoms, researchers infected 80 people with the influenza virus, again in their noses. They gave them Tamiflu to 56 and a placebo to the rest. Then researchers washed out people's noses and measured the number of virus particles in their mucus. They reported Tamiflu treatment reduced the number of viral copies in people's nasal passages. While quantifying the number of viral particles in people's noses after the flu virus was stuck into those people's noses does not tell us anything about how the flu virus is spreading throughout the body. Anyway, for whatever reason, use your imagination, the FDA administrators, the top people at the top, overruled the medical expert committee's suggestions and approved Tamiflu in October 1999. But the FDA hedged a bit and required the drug maker to issue the following statement, quote, Tamiflu has not been proven to have a positive impact on the potential consequences such as hospitalizations, death, or economic impact of seasonal, avian, or pandemic influenza. Whoa, doesn't work. But they never tell you that. They never show you this. And since its FDA approval, clinical trials touting the effectiveness of Tamiflu have been published. Though look carefully at the authors. For example, Penelope Ward, MD, has authored dozens of scientific studies that support Tamiflu, including that 1999 JAMA study that I just discussed, and another one in 2001, and with similar conclusions. But then we take a look at the fact that she served as the head of clinical development for, guess, Hoffmann-La-Roche, the person who makes the flu. Actually, let's look at the footnote on that 1999 New England Journal of Medicine study, supported by grants from Hoffmann-La-Roche. Oh, there she is. Okay. Plus, there were other doctors, authors of all these pro studies. Quote, Dr. Hayden, Atmar, Graverstein have served as paid consultants to Hoffmann-La-Roche, Gilead Sciences, or both. Interesting. Overall, it appears that all the studies, every single one that supports the efficacy of Tamiflu, are funded by the pharmaceutical companies that stand to profit from the sales. Fortunately, a group of unbiased medical experts at the U.S. Cochrane Center reanalyzed data from the 20 clinical trials like these, reporting the results in a 2009 British Medical Journal article. Their meta-analysis showed there is no significant evidence that Tamiflu reduces influenza symptoms or complications. The only possible positive association was that Tamiflu might decrease the length of time people exhibited symptoms by a few hours. Further, the reanalysis found that Tamiflu increases nausea. Now, as an interesting aside, Cochrane Research Center researchers know that it took years-long concerted efforts to obtain clinical data from drug makers. Along these lines, investigative articles published in The Atlantic in 2009-2013 suggest that political and financial motivations underpin this Tamiflu delusion. So where does this leave us? A 2007 scientific report suggests that Tamiflu is in fact exceedingly dangerous. In the 6 years that Tamiflu was marketed in Japan, the Japanese Minister of Health, Labor, and Welfare received 1,377 reports of adverse reactions. Approximately half of these reactions were serious neuropsychiatric cases, including delirium, convulsions, and cephalopathic conditions. 80 deaths were reported, and 71 were considered to be directly related to Tamiflu. and two of the most alarming deaths were suicides by 14-year-old teens on Tamiflu. A 2011 Japanese study found that those diagnosed with influenza had an almost 600% increased risk of deteriorating and dying within 12 hours after receiving Tamiflu. Here's what they conclude. Quote, these data suggest Tamiflu use could induce sudden deterioration leading to death, especially within 12 hours of prescription. These findings are consistent with sudden death observed in a series of animal toxicity studies, several reported case series, and the results of prospective cohort studies. From the precautionary principle, the potential harm of Tamiflu should be taken into account and further detailed studies should be conducted. Okay. So I just want to show you what the media is not, give you that side of the picture, which you have not had. And of course, don't forget vitamin D3 also is strengthening your immune system. So that gives you an update on from our public health science on what to be concerned with. I'm going to hold my report because I want to go to my guest who's now standing by. So Voodoo Science, the Myth of Vaccine Efficacy, I will present on tomorrow's program. But now let's go over and say hello. And we will also, if we have time later, talk with Elizabeth about your calls. But Danny Sheehan is on the line. And I gave you Danny's comments earlier about his background as a constitutional lawyer. And during the past 45 years, he has handled such public interest cases, the Pentagon Papers, the Watergate break-in, the Iran-Contra scandal, Silkwood murder case, and so many others. Currently, he is in somewhere out west. I'm going to ask him where, representing the Native Nations at Standing Rock against the North Dakota State government and the private corporations building the pipeline. He is the founder of the Christic Institute and the Romero Institute, and this is a nonprofit public policy center in Santa Cruz, California. Danny has law degrees from Harvard University and later returned and studied at Harvard Divinity School. He's the author of The People's Advocate. Nice to have you with us today, Danny.
Terrific, Gary. It's great to be here. As I'm up on Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota. It's 35 degrees below zero last night.
Good.
Danny. Kills all those flu germs.
Doesn't it? Danny, when you look at what's going on in the media, it's a circus.
Oh, yeah.
But behind the circus, we have to deconstruct it in order to reconstruct it.
That's right.
I see at the core of all this the Clintons and what they protect. So if you're associated with the Clintons, whether you're a military-industrial complex contractor, a legislator, a news person, you know that as long as you're one of the pro-Clinton group, your interests will be protected. And we, Richard Gale and myself, did an analysis, and we found that just in the military-industrial complex alone, there's 5.2 million jobs that are dependent upon the neocon, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Bilderberg Group, philosophy of war, never stop war. Always put people in war or fear of war, NATO buildup, invasion in Syria, invasion in Libya, regime change in Honduras, get NATO up against Russia, make Russia the big bad evil empire, make China the big bad evil empire, make Iran the big bad evil empire. The military-industrial complex and the Washington consensus love this. In order to protect this enormous multi-trillion-dollar asset, the Clintons, you also have to control the media. Now, on yesterday's program, I went through the fact that six major corporations control more than 13,000 media outlets. And these are all aligned with Clinton. Not one, except for Fox, is aligned with the Republicans and conservatives, but all the rest are aligned with Clinton, even though they call themselves Democrat or liberal. No one is looking at this. They're just looking at the memo. But the memo is revealing because the people who not only wrote the memo, but the people who read the original documentation in the FISA material from which the memo was written. Tell us your perspective on this, please.
Well, it's a, that's a load. I think that the key to this, Gary, is that as we talked about earlier, is that at the very official end of the Cold War on December 31st of 1991, when Gorbachev actually formally released all of the republics of the Soviet Union to become independent if they chose to do so, the bottom line is that at that specific point, the Democratic Party, which had since basically 1917, with the Bolshevik Revolution, all between October 1917 all the way to December of 1991, had been playing this game of holding themselves out as the alternative to a progressive socialist option, which had at least been the ideal of the Bolshevik Revolution at the origins of it. And the Republican Party held on to the same pre-World War I kind of robber baron vision of a capitalist-driven government partnership with the corporations that had been created during the robber baron era to govern all policies, economic, social, political, in the country. And so this dialectic had gone on from that period, from all that period from 1917 to 1991, between this kind of potential progressive, social democratic option, to a capitalist dominated, frankly fascist type of alternative. What happened is immediately upon the withdrawal of the Soviet Union from the Cold War and the dissolution of the Soviet Union, what happened is the Democratic Party abandoned that type of a role, finding it no longer to be necessary, and they made this move to establish the Democratic Leadership Conference. Richard Gebhardt, one of the congressmen from the Midwest, along with Clinton's, said, look, the Democratic Leadership Conference should set forth a new, more moderate Democratic Party. And what they did is they established this neocon agenda of saying, look, what we're going to do is we're going to set up this process of melding the Democratic Party to the major financial, banking, corporate institutions, because there's no longer any debate between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. It's just a question of degree. And so what's happened here is that ever since the dissolution of the Soviet Union, the Republican Party has been gravitating more and more and more to the extreme right wing, setting up this project for a new American century under Vice President Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz and Elliot Abrams and that whole crowd. They retreated conspicuously right back to a raw robber baron, kind of elite, capitalist, imperialist kind of ideology. And the new more moderate Democratic Party set itself up to the right of center as a apparent foil to this. And that's what's really going on here. And the fundamental question is whether or not a genuine liberal or progressive worldview or vision can be generated. There were some ruminations of that during the primary campaign, of course, in 2016, inside the Democratic Party, when Bernie Sanders actually challenged Hillary Clinton and the neocons, or the Democratic Leadership Conference, tried to establish a genuine liberal or progressive alternative for the Democratic Party. Actually, no more radical than basically a Roosevelt type of social and economic safety net for the working people, and setting up potentially single payer health system, Social Security, et cetera. That's the dynamic that's actually taking place right now. It's a three way trialectic between the classic robber barons in the Republican Party, now blatantly fascist and transparently so with the Trump administration, basically welding the relationship of corporations to the state, picking the CEO of ExxonMobil to be the Secretary of Defense, picking, radical anti-environmentalists and oil producers and stuff to be in charge of the environment, all of these things. And then this fake foil of the Democratic Leadership Conference and this kind of neocon kind of position of Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and Richard Gebhardt and, you know, and all of these folks, that they're pretending that's where the real contest is. And it's not. The question really is there a third element in this conflict? Is there a genuine progressive democratic option, a Justice Democrats, if you will, under Bernie Sanders and the members of the Progressive Caucus? There's some 75 members in the House of Representatives of the Progressive Caucus, virtually every single one of them from a congressional district where is a major university, where people read books, understand history, do actual intellectual analysis of issues, et cetera, so that there's this basic trialectic that's going on right now among those three contending parties. The question is, what is the role of Trump in all of this? You know, he has come forward with a kind of a small-minded, venal, nasty kind of chaos-generating dynamic that's in this, which, no matter what the relationship between him and Steve Bannon is really being exemplified by Steve Bannon, which is a raw, fascist, you know, white, racial superiority theory. And they're using that as a fourth foil. The Republican Party is trying to say, oh, see, you don't want to really go there. We don't want to become completely fascist and blatantly racist. You know, like here's Donald Trump and Steve Bannon. Oh, they're really awful. We're not that bad. You know, all we are is extremely pro-capitalist, pro-corporate, pro-business, all of this kind of thing. And so that I think that's what the dynamic is. I think that this, but the Council on Foreign Relations, as you point out, and the Bilderbergers and the Democratic Leadership Conference and all that, they are an aggressively right of center coalition that is attempting to present itself as the fallback position to Trump. They're trying to basically hold themselves out as the heroes, but basically virtually every one of them would have qualified as a Republican, you know, back in the time of Everett Dirksen and the regular Republican Party, Eisenhower and all those people. The Democratic Party has become a Republican Party. The Republican Party has become a fascist party. So the question is whether or not there's going to be a Justice Democratic Party led by people like Bernie Sanders and the people that are in the Democratic Party that are the so-called liberal wing of the Democratic Party, which is actually the Progressive Caucus. That's how I see the dynamic of happening right here now in this threat of chaos, this complete absurdity that's being displayed every single night on the news is basically being set up as the foil to usher in everybody sort of racing to adopt this new, more moderate Democratic Party as the champion. I have no doubt what they're going to do is they're going to try to nominate Joe Biden. I mean, if you watch Joe Biden appearing regularly at the Council on Foreign Relations with Richard Haass chairing them and putting on all these talks, they're saying, oh, look at Joe Biden. Isn't he cool? He's been the longest sitting senator that's in the entire United States Senate. He's been the vice president. He's been the chair of the Judiciary Committee. He's been the chair of the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate. He's more experienced than anybody. This guy is really fantastic. He's sort of like Obama, only he's a little less eloquent. I don't have any doubt at all that the regular Democratic Party is going to try to tender Joe Biden to be the candidate for the regular Democratic Party. The question, of course, is who are the Republicans going to put up? I don't think that it's going to be you know, anybody we've seen yet. So that question is, who are they going to present as sort of the savior of the Republican Party to replace Trump? I don't think in 100 years they're going to renominate him. They won't adopt a process like they did last time that just tried to accelerate the nominee for the Republican Party, which resulted in Trump being able to win all the delegates in all those states with only 18 or 20% of the vote. I don't think they're going to repeat that mistake. But that I think that this is an extraordinarily important time. It provides all kinds of opportunities for an alliance between a lot of the traditional libertarians, the Libertarian Party people, and the liberals and the progressives, if we can form an effective coalition. The problem with the libertarians that I've always had is that they are just so wedded to the capitalist model, which, as we've talked about before, Pope Francis has pointed out in his papal encyclical on global climate change back in June of 2015, saying that, look, you know, the capitalist structure, not entrepreneurial business people, not private property, not any of that, but this transnational corporate capitalist model where you have a corporation that is completely devoid of any kind of moral judgment. Its sole objective is to maximize the short-term profit for the corporation at the despoiling of the planet, the destruction of the environment, the raping and pillaging of the working class. You know, this type of thing has come on basically at the beginning of the robber baron era, back shortly after the conclusion of the American Civil War. This actually began around 1872-75 with the installation of this new business vehicle of the shareholder-owned corporate capitalist business vehicle. This has got to be eliminated. I think we can help. We can resuscitate kind of genuine entrepreneurial spirit, business models, people taking risk in exchange for potential long-term gain. You know, these are all positive features of our country and our human family. But there's institutional sin that we're looking at right now. And you track this consistently, Gary, when you're pointing out things like, let's take a look at the corporate ownership of the agencies that are supposed to regulate health products, et cetera, you know, and take a look at where the financing is behind these things and the financing behind the political parties. This malady in the system of this transnational corporate shareholder-owned corporation has got to be addressed, and it needs to be a central part, I think, of an alternative platform for the new, more progressive Democratic Party that needs to be tendered for the 2020 convention. The Progressive Caucus needs to join together these 75 members of the Congress, join together and put forth a full-scale alternative agenda, with single-payer health, with the, you know, eliminating the corporate dominance of the political process, you know, breaking up these huge conglomerates that are owning all the media, et cetera. You know, very much like Franklin Roosevelt, we have to have a situation similar to the intervention that Roosevelt did, but his whole major objective, of course, was to salvage and save the capitalist system in the face of the catastrophe that they had generated in the 1929 stock crash, in the collapse of the economy. So that I think that there needs to be a new deal. There needs to be a new deal. There needs to be a new Democratic Party, what they call the Justice Democratic Party or the New Democratic Party. But I think they need to function inside the Democratic Party to present and confront the regular Democratic Party, this new, more moderate Democratic Leadership Conference-dominated Democratic Party. They need to confront them with a full-scale, fully thought-out platform which has an alternative budget, an alternative military budget, an alternative social spending budget, a taxing system. You know, they have to set forth this in a fully comprehensive way to take complete advantage of this unique moment that I think that we're in with the kind of shattering and collapse of the traditional trust, blind, unreflecting trust that the vast majority of people in our country have been trained by the state-sponsored public schools to sit lay back and let the elite run the government for them. I think that's a short-term advantage that we have here. That, I think, has been shattered by the Trump administration and the kind of ballyhoo that's going on between the Republicans and Democrats. Yes.
Dan, we look forward to doing a whole hour with you on these very topics. So I appreciate you taking time out from helping all the different Native American tribes out there to come on and share your insights. Now go back inside and get warm.
Okay, you got it. You got it, Gary.
Take care, Danny.
Call anytime. As you know, I'm happy to discuss these things. Great.
All right. Danny Sheehan, he is out defending the rights of Native Americans. We're out of time. Thanks. Got to go.